Spirit Blade Underground episode
499.
Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. On the show today, my review of... Oh my gosh, is that a garbage truck? Holy crap, there was like a jet flying by. My office, I thought, started to rumble a little bit. Okay, anyway, on the show today, a review of Pacific Rim Uprising, some thoughts on Titan Quest for the PS4, and another audiobook review by Katja from the Netherlands, as well as a look at our true enemies in life as we continue in the book of Ephesians. As a side note, guys, I know I mentioned that I was going to review The Shape of Water this week. I've been trying to review that for quite a while. I did not review it again because my wife and I rented it, and I'd gotten a little lax. I've loved almost all of Guillermo del Toro's movies. He's never, in the movies that I've seen of his, which is pretty much all of them, been one that's fallen back on using nudity in his movies. So I didn't even think, to my own shame, to look at the ratings info for this one. I just assumed it would be about gore and, you know, stuff. But in the first 35 minutes alone, there I was having to look away a lot and asking my wife when I could look back. And at the 35-minute mark, I just went over to IMDb and, like, how much more of this can I expect, you know? And there was enough more coming later on in the movie that I was like, I can't do this, Holly. I got to be done, you know? And that was really disappointing. And it was also disappointing in those first 35 minutes to just see how romance was treated, how love was treated, how they defined loneliness, and what the overemphasis on sex and as kind of like this, you know, major fulfilling component in, you know, in like the opposite of loneliness is sex. You know, that's what we want really in our deepest relationships is. So, I mean, it's just kind of like it felt like in the first 35 minutes, just like this, ugh. It was a bummer already just to see that this movie was not what I thought it was going to be. And then, like, on top of that, to be having to have my eyes dodge what was on the screen so repeatedly. So, bummer. I'm not reviewing that one. Obviously, I don't recommend checking it out. And I am kind of along those lines in April going to be doing a follow-up video on the subject of nudity in entertainment. And I realized that there were some gaps, some things that I didn't represent that over time I wish I would have in the first video that I put up about sexuality and nudity and fantasies and entertainment. There's an entirely other side of the issue that I think is really important to keep in mind as we're deciding what content we're going to allow our eyes to rest on. So you can look forward to that sometime in April, and I hope you will. It's a controversial issue, and I hope to approach it in a way that is not shaming at all, but that will just give us a fresh look at this issue and how important it is to really think about how we're going to approach content that has nudity in it. So anyway, all right, but that's not the focus of today's show. Let's get on to what we're doing today. We got plenty enough to talk about. Pacific Rim Uprising. The synopsis on IMDb reads, Jake Pentecost, son of Stacker Pentecost, reunites with Mako Mori, or is it Mako, I don't remember what her name sounded like when it was said out loud. I'm going to say Mako. Mako Mori to lead a new generation of Jaeger pilots, including rival Lambert and 15-year-old hacker Amara against a new kaiju threat. I don't think you really need to have seen the first one in order to jump on board for this. You're just going to either accept the setting or not. If you're into the setting of giant monsters fighting giant mechs, then, you know, you don't need... There's a narration at the beginning that just kind of gets you caught up, and the status quo has changed enough that it feels a bit like a new beginning. So you really don't have to have seen the first one. That said, you know, I think that there's some benefit to seeing it. And if you haven't and you enjoyed this one, then definitely go back and watch that first one. Anyway, let me talk a little bit about the story, the script, the pacing, just the general tone. I would describe this largely as a light-toned action sci-fi movie. It's very much in line with the current tone made popular by Marvel movies and that has now seemingly been adopted by Star Wars: The Last Jedi. Characters are all just a bit exaggerated with performances that kind of match that. There's a lot of dialogue, logistics, and character choices that wouldn't make sense to me in the real world. I found myself asking, why would they do that? Or why would he say that? Or why? And I just had to let go of that and just kind of accept, okay, this is just that kind of movie. You know, an example would be the hero kind of standing and looking cool as enemies shoot at him, you know, confident that they're going to miss because this door is kind of closing on them in the process. I'd be like, dude, even if that door is closing on them, why are you standing there looking cool? Get out of the way. That's just one. There's lots of little things like that all over the place. Another example would be neglecting to test some tech functionality before taking it into the field. And it's not this. It wasn't the situation where it was like, oh my gosh, you know, the aliens are attacking. We got to get out there now. We can't wait to test this. No, it was like, okay, we're going to go out and do this standard thing. I hope this works out. This tech hasn't been tested yet. And I'm like, what? It wasn't so standard that like it wouldn't still be important to kind of test the functionality of this tech out anyway. And it was more about not just the functionality of the tech, but the compatibility of the pilots. If you're familiar with the first movie, then that was the issue at hand. If you're not familiar with the first movie, then just the compatibility of the pilots with the technology that they're using. Anyway, let's see here. It's a choice, really, I think, of style over realism that, you know, sometimes in a different style and with different elements of realism being neglected, I can totally be on board for, you know. I am a fan of Zack Snyder movies, and certainly that there's a lot of style going on there, and sometimes realism gets ejected for that. But it's, for me, as for anybody, we all kind of have our desire for selective realism. There's things that we selectively want to feel more realistic to us, and we're willing to let go of a lot of other things. And so for whatever reason, this cocktail of elements wasn't working for me because I wanted some different things to be treated in a more realistic manner than they were. But I do think that a lot of people are likely to connect with this movie and its tone. But that's just not the case for me. For me, a lot of the dialogue that went for melodrama just felt like stumbling cliche, and the jokes felt like obligations that were inserted into the script. As far as the cast goes, this has been the case for me a lot lately. I felt like the cast was pretty solid, but also wasn't given material to work with that provided much challenge or opportunity for nuance and subtext. Okay, the stunts and visuals, gotta say something about that. Lots of CG, and my cursed eyes pick out CG just like, ugh, like, I hate it. But, you know, I can also accept that and go into a movie and say, all right, it's just going to look like cartoons and that's fine, you know. And this wasn't, you know, as bad as some CG is to my eyes in other movies. And if you come for the giant mechs fighting giant monsters experience, you're going to get a ton of bang for your buck in this. Giant mechs and giant monsters or the two things fighting each other isn't really my kind of genre. I'm open to it. But as I was watching the visuals, I was like, hey, can someone make the game? I think I would be more invested in what was going on if I was controlling things, you know? And I like conceptually some things about giant monsters and especially giant mechs, but I kind of want to be simulating the being in the pilot seat a little bit more instead of just watching the action happening in a story that I'm not connecting with. But even so, I enjoyed some of the action visuals in the second half. You know, it was cool to see what weird things the enemy could do near the climax, and the mechs each had kind of their specialties as well. So although I wasn't invested in the action, it was still visually interesting to see how it unfolded in the last 30 minutes of the movie. Okay, so I always try to ask myself, is there anything of worthwhile moral, philosophical, spiritual significance going on in the theme of this thing that I'm taking in that might stimulate worthwhile thought or conversation? Despite this movie being pretty forgettable to me, its central theme is one that is so important, I think, for everyone to remember, and that we as Christian geeks often forget. the main character, about halfway through the movie, tells a younger trainee, this is pretty close to the quote. I might be getting it just a little bit off, but pretty darn close. He says, "Don't let what other people think of you define who you are. You won't like what happens if you go down that path." Let me say that again. Don't let what other people think of you define who you are. You won't like what happens if you go down that path. There was more than one character in this movie that was struggling against what people thought of them. And they might have been telling themselves, "I don't care what people think," and raging against those opinions that were being expressed about them. They might have been kind of raging in rebellion against those things, and yet those opinions were still clearly having an effect on them, having an effect on their emotions, having an effect on their outlook on life, having an effect on what they were prioritizing in their life and making their lives about. And this theme was restated in a slightly modified way near the climax of the movie as well. So it definitely came out to me as like, okay, this is, if anything, the theme of the movie. It is frustrating to me how much weight I give to the words of other people and their opinions about me, their thoughts about me, or whatever. If you asked me on a written exam, I'd tell you that the Bible is my ultimate source of truth and it defines my outlook on life. And in many cases, that's true in how it plays out in my life. But I still struggle and often fail to remember what God says and value what He says more than what other people say or might be thinking about me. If you and I don't constantly guard against it, we will allow the opinions of our parents, our coworkers, our friends, or people online to dictate how we order our lives, what we spend our time thinking about. We will strive for some measure of success defined by the people we know. We'll lose sleep or have a weekend spoiled as we wait for some email response from somebody. We'll choose to reject jobs or even churches based on goals that will not satisfy us when we achieve them, or that will even be unreachable because they're so vaguely defined. We might tell ourselves and everyone else, as some of these characters kind of did in this movie, that we don't care about what other people think of us. And yet, we still so easily allow the opinions of others to influence our goals and our entire outlook on life, how we order our lives. And to the degree we go down that path, we will see our lives get completely screwed up. That message was something that I needed to hear this week, and I'm pretty sure that I'm not alone in that. Now, as for recommendations, well, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time and say, Peter, skip this one. If it's ever on Amazon Prime or somewhere else, you don't have to pay any extra for it. Put it on while you play a video game or do some cleaning. You'll like watching some of the visuals, but you won't want to devote your full time, attention, or certainly any money to watching this movie. That said, if a third movie gets made and the trailers look good, give this one a watch to prep for that third one, because the hints at the end of this movie indicate that a third movie could go in a pretty interesting direction. It's rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi, violence, and action, and some language. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Hi guys, this is Katja from the Netherlands, call me Kate on the forums, and today I'm sharing with you another of my audiobook reviews, and this one is Tarkin, a Star Wars novel. And a little while ago I took some very tentative steps into the Star Wars expanded universe, starting with the Darth Plagueis audiobook, on which I also did a review on the podcast here. And it was a tentative step because I didn't want to commit, since the Lucasfilm story group banished the entire EU, once official canon lore, to the realm of what they now call legends. Of course, I lost that not very hard-fought battle and am now swimming neck-deep in the entire original EU, now legends. So, audiobooks, novels, comics, and even game plot summaries. However, I did want to try the new canonical continuity and tried two of the new novels in audiobook format. The first one is Tarkin. written by James Lucino and read by Ewan Morton. Length 9 hours and 27 minutes. The publisher's summary reads, "A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away." Best-selling Star Wars veteran James Lucino gives Grand Moff Tarkin the Star Wars Darth Plagueis treatment, bringing a legendary character from A New Hope to full, fascinating life. He's the scion of an honorable and revered family, a dedicated soldier and distinguished legislator, loyal proponent of the Republic and trusted ally of the Jedi Order, groomed by the ruthless politician and Sith Lord who would be Emperor. Governor Wilhuff Tarkin rises through the Imperial ranks, enforcing his authority ever more mercilessly, and zealously pursuing his destiny as the architect of absolute dominion. "Rule through the fear of force rather than force itself," he advises the Emperor. Under Tarkin's guidance, an ultimate weapon of unparalleled destruction moves ever closer to becoming a terrifying reality. When the so-called Death Star is completed, Tarkin is confident that the galaxy's lingering pockets of separatist rebellion will be brought to heel by intimidation or annihilation. Until then, however, insurgency remains a genuine threat. Escalating guerrilla attacks by resistance forces and newfound evidence of a growing separatist conspiracy are an immediate danger the Empire must meet with swift and brutal action. And to bring down a band of elusive freedom fighters, the Emperor turns to his most formidable agents, Darth Vader, the fearsome new Sith enforcer as remorseless as he is mysterious, and Tarkin, whose tactical cunning and cold-blooded efficiency will pave the way for the Empire's supremacy and its enemies' extinction. My thoughts: not enough action, too little suspense. Although well read by Morton, this is definitely not my favorite Star Wars novel. I was curious what nuggets of new Star Wars lore this novel would offer, but for me it fell flat. The story built too slowly, there was hardly any suspense, and in my opinion it could have been at least 30% shorter. And most importantly, it did not succeed in making me care for any of its characters, nor the main plotline. The problem that needs solving by Tarkin. Except, of course, for Darth Vader and the Emperor, who are not nearly enough in it. Narrator Morton does a great Vader, by the way, very well done considering nobody can really come close to James Earl Jones. I'm a big fan of Lucino's Darth Plagueis, which I highly, highly recommend to any Star Wars fan, and on which I also did a review on this podcast. So I had hoped for a bit of that same quality of storytelling that kept me glued to my couch even though it was an audiobook. But alas. Perhaps Lucino had to make the most of a pre-outlined plot, or perhaps he just doesn't feel the new Star Wars universe anymore, like he did so well with Darth Plagueis. There are, of course, the usual Star Wars audio effects, which I like. For instance, when Vader's in a scene, we hear him breathing through his apparatus. All in all, a disappointment. I bought and listened to this audiobook anyway, out of a sense of completism for the new Star Wars universe, which is about the only reason you should buy it. So thank you for listening, and let me know what you think on the forums or on my blog, which is comicsandgadgets.wordpress.com. Bye-bye, and tot de volgende keer!
This time I'm looking at Titan Quest for the PlayStation 4. This game was released on PC I don't know how many years ago, and just recently, for whatever reason, it's been ported to consoles, and I am really interested in seeing if this is going to be the right kind of game for me. I love Diablo clones. I'm not as big of a fan, surprisingly, of the Diablo series itself. I enjoyed the first one on PC. I got about halfway through the second one, and I don't know, I just felt like it was going to have to be too grindy for me to be able to get past this certain spot. And then Diablo 3, I really I mean, I played through and I kind of enjoyed enough to get through the whole game, but it hasn't stuck to me. Part of that is because I do not like playing with keyboard and mouse, and no matter how many people in the world say that keyboard and mouse is superior, somehow that doesn't help me enjoy using keyboard and mouse anymore. So, I really prefer gamepad. Another reason I think has something to do with the number of enemies in Diablo 3, which got to be swarming so much, and that's become more and more popular in Diablo clones. It starts to feel like an RTS almost, instead of like an action RPG. I suspect they started using swarming enemies more in these types of games just because they could technically get more enemies on the screen with advances in video game consoles and stuff like that. But I don't necessarily want that. I like the individual enemies to feel a little bit more significant as I'm fighting them. Some console Diablo clones that I've really enjoyed in the past would include Torchlight, although for me that the art style is a little bit cartoony. I like something that's a little bit more, you know, grim and gritty or whatever. I also really enjoy the Snowblind games. Those are probably the pinnacle of my Diablo clone experiences, which would include on the PlayStation 2, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2, Champions of Norrath, and also I did play some of Champions of Norrath Return to Arms, didn't find it as enjoyable as this one. I really enjoy these in single player, and this Return to Arms was more of a multiplayer game. So yeah, that's another thing. I'm also a hermit gamer. I play by myself, and I enjoy that more than playing with others, couch co-op, or certainly online. And so I'm always looking for a good single player experience, not something that's dependent upon multiplayer to be enjoyable. Also really enjoyed Snowblind's Justice League Heroes Diablo clone. So I definitely enjoy this genre, but they just don't often come to console, and then when they do, as in the case with, say, Victor Vran and Van Helsing, I haven't checked out those yet, just because looking at reviews, it looked like there was a lot of enemy swarming, and also unsatisfying loot, and that's a big part of the experience for me as well. I want to feel like I'm pretty steadily upgrading and becoming more and more powerful as my character's making their way through the game. So I'm going to do something a little bit different in talking about Titan Quest. I'm actually going to use the front and the back of the audio from the video that's up at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral this week. But for the middle part, which in the video covers my just experience playing the game, I'm actually right here just going to share my basic thoughts on the game. I'm kind of experimenting with this as a way to get that video game, more of that video game themed content onto the podcast. So I'd be interested in your feedback as to whether or not you're interested in having that content kind of translated onto the podcast like this. And just, you know, what you think of that, if that's, you know, it's a way that, like, with just a little bit of extra work, you know, I can't do a totally separate thing every time and write notes and stuff. This is going to be kind of off the cuff, but I would be interested in your opinion if you, you know, want me to do more of this in the future when I do a video game reviews. So anyway, I enjoyed a number of elements from Titan Quest. The problem is, and I learned this pretty quickly, even though it has a lot of those scratches, a lot of those itches for a Diablo clone, and it's, you know, the controls took a little bit of getting used to, but are still doable. The combat is just a little bit too simple. You can essentially hold down square on a field filled with enemies, and not only will you continue to auto-attack the closest enemy, as soon as you kill them, you will auto-target another enemy, walk over to them, and then start attacking them. So literally, you can walk onto a section of the map where there's like six enemies, and then just hold down square and just check out for a while, and as you attack all of them, and you only need to pay attention if your health gets low enough that you need to click L1 to take a potion, and then you'll be fine. And even that, I found I rarely had to do, because I felt overpowered very, very quickly, just from picking up gear and going and selling it and picking out. I never had to buy a single potion, and I had like 14 in reserve at one point. And for a while in the video, you can see this, I just sat there and let bad guys wail on me, like four at a time, two archers, two close-up melee guys, and I was just sitting there watching my health slowly, ever so slowly go down. I did not feel in danger at all. Eventually, I did click to drink a potion, and that basically filled me up to the top again. So there was something going on with the challenge of this game that I just have not experienced in the other types of Diablo clones that I've really enjoyed that did have more challenge. And the solution for me is not to have more enemies. I don't want the screen swarming with enemies like in Diablo 3. I just want the enemies individually to have more potential to kind of threaten me a little bit. So that was disappointing. The graphics are okay. It's clearly a dated game, a game that came out as many as maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago. I can't remember. It's been a while, but that doesn't bother me. I stayed in the zoomed out mode most of the time where you don't really notice it a lot. And for me, I'm more about gameplay than graphics. Just as long as the graphics are good enough to kind of represent a tone or a vibe for an environment in a game, that's enough for me. That was really disappointing. It got to the point where I was like, oh, I'm tired of going back to town all the time and selling all my gear. And there's really almost never anything very quickly. Anyway, after a couple hours, you know, nothing in the store that I have my eye on that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait till I have enough money to buy such and such weapon. And even if there was a significant upgrade available to buy in the, you know, shopkeeper's place, I didn't feel the need to. I just didn't feel like I needed to. Like, I was going to be just fine no matter what. And it's not that I want the game to be more difficult in terms of how I need to be skilled in controlling it and my reflexes and stuff. If you've seen my video game reviews or know of my strengths and weaknesses largely, I'm terrible at games that require good reflexes and hand-eye coordination and quick thinking and stuff like that. But I do want some choice to be required of me. I want to at least be faced with the dilemma of, oh, is it worth it to take this potion now? I don't have many left. Should I wait until I'm a little bit lower and then trigger because I have a limited supply of potions? That choice alone would keep me engaged more, and this game just was not even offering that choice. You know, it was, ugh. I got online and look to see if anybody else was, am I doing this wrong with the crap, you know? And I found a bunch of old kind of reviews of the game from when it was on PC and people talking about it. And it's basically, yeah, this has been everyone's experience. A lot of people just accepted it. They were okay. Like, for them, the first playthrough is like really super easy, and then the difficulty really ramps up once you unlock the next difficulty and can move forward into that. But I mean, I don't really want to have to go through this mindless experience. And understand, please understand, I never want games to be more difficult. It was so weird for me to want this game to be more difficult. I couldn't believe what was coming out of my mouth in saying, man, I wish this game was more I never want that. It was so bizarre, so bizarre. But that's really what I wanted. And I mean, at first I was concerned when I got to the main menus before starting the game. I saw that there was only one difficulty available, normal, no easy mode. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I like that. Games, I like games to have easy modes, you know. And the higher difficulties are locked until you complete at least the campaign on normal. So man, that was disappointing. It was only $30, which I'm glad for, but I was bummed out. It had some variety in terms of the classes that you could choose at level 2, and then again at level 8 when you level up, you can choose a different class. And there's like, I want to say 8 different classes, six or 8 different classes, and there was some cool thematic variety in those. When I saw that, I was like, oh, this is neat, you know. But I'm playing a magic user, and the spells just did not look as spectacular as I want them to look either. So again, it's not that the graphics need to be sharper or better or whatever, or the textures more detailed. It's the visual design of something, you know. If it's just a really simple little fireball that's supposed to represent this lava blast that makes has an area of effect that, you know, there was an area of effect thing that looked exactly the same as my normal fireball attack, which is a teeny tiny little fireball anyway, that when it lands, it just kind of just disappears, and it still, you know, has an area effect if there's any guys in the area, but you don't see like an explosion of flame radiating out to represent that it has this kind of like area of effect ability. So, little disappointing. But there were some interesting thoughts that came to mind as I played the game. So I'll jump over to that part of the audio from the video now. And after that, you'll also get my closing thoughts.
It's weird. It kind of makes me think about the idea of challenge in games. And
we want challenge in games. I mean, I can't speak for people who like play the Souls type games. That's not for me at all. I don't even want to play Super Mario Brothers because it's too hard for me. So why do I want some challenge in this game? I suspect it's because we were made from the very beginning, before the fall, to work, to take on challenges. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, it says, Yahweh God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. So we're meant to maintain or take something and make it better or productive. Verse 18, then Yahweh God said, it is not good that a man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. So we're meant to also work in partnership with each other, doing some kind of work, taking a situation and making something better out of it. It wasn't until sin, it wasn't until the fall that work got all screwed up. After that, God said to Adam, cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. And you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread. So obstacles like thorns and thistles and intense effort that caused sweat, that was not an intended part of work. But sin screwed it up. It made us susceptible to death and weakness and frustrations. And games, I think, are a way that we can scratch some of that itch to take something in a situation and make it better. Whether you're accruing points in a board game or jumping around in a Mario Brothers level or fighting bad guys and, you know, whatever kind of game it is, we start at one state, we take on challenges, and then we end in a better state. In that way, I think games are kind of an outworking of our desire to experience work as it was meant to be originally, not as it has become in this world. I don't think a concept of heaven in which there are no challenges to overcome is a biblical concept. I don't think that lines up with what we were made for. There's even indications that there could be like trade or some kind of commerce going on in Revelation chapter 21 in the new heaven and the new earth. In chapter 21, verse 24, describing the New Jerusalem, it says, by its light will the nations walk. So there's still going to be nations, multiple nations, organized masses of people. And the kings of the earth, multiple kings, multiple kind of governments, the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. And its gates will never be shut by day, and there will be no night there. They will bring into it the glory and the honor of the nations. And that seems to suggest that each of these nations will have something that they are known for, their glory, and they will bring that into the New Jerusalem. So all that to say, I don't like games that are too hard for me, but I do like some kind of challenge because I think it's hardwired into me to have just enough challenge to be in that sweet spot where I'm enjoying taking a situation and making something better out of it, finding victory, finding accomplishment or whatever. And I think games are at their best when they are doing that and giving us arguably just a tiny little barest bit of a foretaste of life in eternity with Christ and his people. This game is not doing that for me. Normally, I would play an RPG for at least 5 hours to get a good sense of what the game is. Because a lot of RPGs can be like dozens and dozens of hours. And sometimes you need, you know, at least 5 hours to get a sense of what the game is. I think I've got a sense of what this game is. And just to double check, I did a little bit of Googling to see, am I the only one that's having this issue? And a bunch of other people have talked about the game in the past on PC as being really easy the first time through, and really it ramps up in difficulty after you've done a single playthrough. Well, I don't know if I want to try and muscle my way through an entire play of the game before I start enjoying my experience really in a consistent way. So at this point, I think I'm more likely to go back to my Xbox 360 and pick up Sacred 2 again and keep going through that. It's a bummer. I'm glad this game only cost me $30. It is not working out for me.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
This week at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, my trial and error review of Titan Quest, in which I also talk about why we like difficulty in games. So if you want to see, you know, the content on this episode is a little bit different because I'm talking about as I explained earlier, it's a little bit different. So if you want to actually see my reactions to the game as I was playing it and discovering it for the first time, then you can check out that video, Titan Quest, on youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And by now, you should also be able to see my uncut Pacific Rim Uprising review over there. Let's see, what else? Oh, on the Christian Geek Central Facebook and Twitter pages this week, we're playing Zabmondo. If you've never heard of this, it's basically a would-you-rather type of conversation starter type thing. There's a quick rules recap. You have to choose one or the other of the two options given. Comments that are some form of neither are just completely invalid. And the second rule is you can't doctor up the situation to make it easier for yourself. No drowning that bowl of crickets and ketchup before eating them, no resolving to have that ugly growth removed, no having paramedics or anti-venom ready on standby. You have to live with your choice as it is written. You are, however, encouraged to explain why your choice would be less difficult for you than the alternative. The choice for this time around was, would you rather have regular encounters with aliens and not have any proof, or have your best friend be invisible? Would you rather have regular encounters with aliens and not have any proof, or have your best friend be invisible? Personally, I think I might go insane without proof of the aliens to share with anyone, and although I would still live a paranoid life seeking to remain in my invisible friend's good graces, yikes, at least there's the possibility of proving his existence. And assuming he remains my best friend, as the text seems to assume, there could be some great benefits to that. Anyway, you can leave your two cents on Facebook and Twitter, or follow the link from there to our forums and join the conversation. As a reminder, guys, next week is the 500th episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. We're going to celebrate 500 episodes, and then starting with 501, this podcast is being rebranded to the Christian Geek Central podcast. That's just to unify it a little bit more with the Christian Geek Central website and YouTube channel and community. But the content is going to remain unchanged in terms of what you come to expect being the content of this podcast. And also, you will not have to change any, you won't have to resubscribe. It's going to use the same feed. So you should still be getting the podcast in whatever kind of a podcasting service you're using. It should still land right into your podcatcher or whatever. If that's not the case, please let me know so I can fix that. PAETERTER, I said. Didn't enunciate clearly enough. @SpiritBlade.com. PAETER @SpiritBlade.com. So anyway, yeah, that is coming up. Looking forward to that episode next week. As a reminder, guys, if you want to help make sure Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing or do more of it, both faster and better, you're invited to make a donation of any amount, anytime, or become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. I want to say a special thank you to all of my insiders for your very tangible support that really makes so much of my work possible. For more information about becoming a Spirit Blade Insider, you can visit our About page over at spiritblade.com. And while you're there, you're also invited to support us by purchasing a download of one of our original sci-fi fantasy audio dramas for a friend or family member with our available gift codes. Again, for information, visit spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, right now I'm going to attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we can sometimes take for granted, digging into history and languages as I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in scripture. I'm just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth. That's something we can all do, so I hope you'll do that with me. This time we're looking at Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 12, as we've been making our way in this series through the book of Ephesians. We're getting closer to the end here. In the ESV, starting at chapter 10, at verse 10 of chapter 6, it reads, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." Speaking in broad strokes, the book of Ephesians has been a letter from Paul that first tells believers who we are. That's in chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 4, verse 16. And then tells us how we should live to fulfill our intended purpose and identity. And I think that's chapter 4, verse 17 until about the end. In verse 10 of chapter 6 now, Paul begins to conclude this whole letter to the Ephesians, metaphorically describing what our day-to-day kind of mode of operation should be and how we should view our struggles in life. Verse 10 says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil." The emphasis in these verses is on the strength of the Lord. Now, believers are told to be strong in the Lord. So there is an act of being we're commanded to undertake, but while there is some action required on our part, the resulting strength is not simply the power of positive thinking or our own determination of will. The strength is found in the Lord. The source is his might. This power is both offensive and defensive in nature. Having strength is for taking action. That's the more offensive side. And the armor of God is for our defense. And in both cases, God is our source of power. Now, with all this talk of offense and defense, I want to be clear. It's absolutely vital we have the right perspective on what and who it is we're up against. We are going toe-to-toe against the schemes of the devil. It says here. What does that mean? What kinds of schemes does the devil busy himself with in our lives? Both the devil and those that are his allies in the spiritual world. Well, generally speaking, despite his portrayals in numerous supernatural horror movies, Satan and his allies are not primarily interested in hurting or scaring people. That makes for some crazy interesting movies. I don't think biblically that's his primary interest, to just hurt or scare people. He actually wants to divert our lives away from God's agenda. I see that beginning in the Garden of Eden, in Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, in how he diverted Adam and Eve from their purpose and from what God had told them. I see that continuing in Satan's hopes of seeing Job curse God. We see that in Job chapter 1, verse 11. I see it in how he sent his minions to interrupt the ministry of God's angels to humans in Daniel chapter 10, verses 13 and 14. And he even influenced Peter to envision an alternate agenda for Jesus and his ministry in Matthew 16, 21 through 23. And that was after trying to tempt Jesus himself toward an alternate path in Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. So that's more of what he seems to primarily be about. Verse 12 now, it says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." Now, a look at the Psalms quickly makes it clear that God's people have certainly had human enemies. And there is a sense in which we still have human enemies. You could probably think of some people in your life that you think of as enemies. But the Holy Spirit is revealing here that no human is our enemy in the truest sense. Yes, people who hurt us are fully responsible for their choices. They are also unwitting tools of Satan's agenda, who provides them with tempting, evil choices they choose to embrace. Satan is a major reason the world is as painful as it is, and placing him in quarantine will actually be a necessary component of Christ's immensely prosperous reign when he physically returns to govern the earth, as is described in Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 6. Without Satan and his demonic allies, this world would have far less evil than it does. These evil spiritual creatures are our truest enemies. And our battle is about keeping them from derailing our involvement in God's kingdom plans. So what's in all this for geeks as we look at these verses? Well, if you're a geek, chances are good that you've experienced some emotional hurt. In my experience, that just seems to come with the package for a lot of geeks that I've met. Maybe recently, or maybe a lot over the course of your life. Maybe you've been made fun of, criticized unfairly, been unappreciated, or even hated. When that happens, it's really easy for us to see people as our enemies. They're the ones that are there. They're the ones that we see doing these things to us. I can think of a couple people right now from both inside and outside of my church that I struggle not to view as my adversaries. When they come to mind, my first thought is usually disgust or anger because of something they've done that affected me in some way. But the real battle I need to fight is not with them, but with the bitterness that keeps inviting itself back into my thought life that I make welcome at times when they come to mind. It's a bitterness that keeps me from seeing them as people that need Jesus. People that Jesus might want to use me to help them see truth in some way. But as long as I see them as soulless enemies or mere obstacles, I will never be available for what God might want me to do in their lives. In both of these cases I'm thinking about in my life, there's also some of my own sin that contributed to how I was hurt. In one case, I added fuel to the fire in a tense exchange. In the other case, some recurring dysfunctions in my own perspective on life caused the hurt I feel to be blown way, way out of proportion. Every time these individuals come to mind, it seems to take me at least a minute or two before I even remember that I contributed or continue to contribute my own junk to my issues with them or how I'm thinking about them. And sometimes I move on to thinking about something else before I remember my own sin as a component at all. It is so much easier and momentarily satisfying for us to see our relational problems in this binary way, you know, where we say, they are the villain, I am the victim. But people and life are both usually a lot more complicated than the fictions we enjoy or invent. You know, we recognize that about ourselves. We want other people to understand, I'm not as simple as you probably think I am, you know. And yet we don't remember that about other people, that they are just as complex, you know, in who they are and what they have going on in their lives as we are. People are in life are usually a lot more complicated than the fictions we enjoy or invent. When we feel like a completely innocent victim, well, we may be. That can and does happen. But we should also ask ourselves if we maybe, just possibly, might have contributed even the smallest bit of our own sin to a situation that hurt us. And at the same time, we should ask ourselves if something about our perspective on life is allowing the way we are treated to have a bigger effect on our emotions than it actually should. When we misidentify people as our primary enemies, evil wins. Evil wins when we do that. We become bitter or fearful or apathetic. We allow ourselves to be stripped of our purpose in life. But if we see the true nature and identity of our enemy, then the defeats in this life begin looking smaller or even insignificant in light of the eternal victory we've been guaranteed will come in full, and that we can actually start experiencing even now as we allow our perspective to be corrected and changed. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and as useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. As a reminder, guys, if you would like some help finding a good church in your area, I want to help you if I can. Online resources and communities like those from Christian Geek Central, those are good supplements, but by nature they can't speak to your particular situation like relationships in a local church can. The context for almost everything in the New Testament assumes that we are serving and building purposeful relationships in a local church. So whether you're in a church already but it lacks Bible-based intentionality, or you're not attending any church at all, if I can help you get connected to an authentic Bible-oriented church, I want to do that. You can email me at paeter@spiritblade.com, and we can at the very least try to look at some websites of churches in your area code together. Well, I want to thank Katja from the Netherlands again for her audiobook review. Thank you very much for that, Katja. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I will present my thoughts on Far Cry 5 for the PS4, which I've really been looking forward to. And then I'm also planning on reviewing the movie Ready Player One. Haven't read the book, have heard nothing but great things about it, so I'm really curious about what the movie experience is going to be. And then also, it's probably going to be an extra long episode because we're also going to be celebrating our 500th episode next week. Till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade insider. You can get more information from our about page at spiritblade.com. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show this week. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was The Assignment, also known as The Devil Made Me Do It. O'Brien, and we start out with O'Brien meeting his wife Keiko. She's been gone for a week, and she's been down on Bajor. She comes on board, and she instantly starts telling him, "Now I have some news for you. I'm not actually your wife." So he's smiling, and, you know, "Oh yeah, you're playing some game."
She's and, like, "You must do exactly as I say." He's like, "Oh, everything now. I see the game we're playing."
And then once her heart stops until he to get his attention, he realizes this is some non-corporeal alien possessing her body. Or as they call it on Star Trek, Wednesday. everyone on Star Trek gets possessed by a non-corporeal alien once you've been on it long enough. Although, Molly never got that. She never got possessed by an alien. She wasn't around long enough for that. But, and so she's... Basically, she is... If you've ever seen, there's been a lot of, like, thrillers like this. I think of that Johnny Depp movie from the 90s called Nick of Time, where someone took his daughter hostage and forced him to do all these things. It's the same thing where, you know, it's interesting because the hostage taker and the hostage are the same person.
Yeah, it's a possession hostage.
Yeah, the demon has taken possession of your wife and will kill your wife if you don't do what she says. And so the rest of it is O'Brien desperately, although I will say he misses some opportunities to do something.
Yeah.
It's like, because it's not like she's with him the whole time. You know, it's actually not even as tense as Firewall, and that's kind of lame.
And Matt was saying she monitors his movements, but we were both saying, you know, is there no email in the Federation?
Yeah.
Does he have to physically go to Sisko's office to tell him something?
Yeah, if he can't say, like, you know, wife under alien control, don't react, try to scan and find solution without alerting her. Something like that. You know, because of course she is hanging around with Molly all day long, which is smart. You're gonna take another hostage. Take the adorable one. But there's not much this episode. It's all about O'Brien and later Rom coming in and trying to figure out what's going on with this. We are introduced, I'll go ahead and say exactly what this is because you have to know what it is. It is a Pawraith, which is basically like the prophets who built the wormhole, only evil and cast out. So basically it's like Satan saying, I want to get back into heaven, so...
Yeah, these are the fallen angels of the Bajoran religion.
And of course, just like their prophets, they are real. So, and we will see the Pawraiths from time to time in the future. Although not much of them after this. On occasion we'll see them, but mostly not till the very end of the show. In my opinion, when the show starts taking a nosedive, but we'll get to that eventually. Yeah, like I say, not too much about it. It's there's no real subplot to this, just a secondary plot about Rom. But it's right in line with this, so...
Well, and Rom gets to be actually kind of badass in this episode.
Yeah. Rom is, he's pretty sharp.
He figures something out before O'Brien does. Now, granted, O'Brien is saddled with a massive distraction.
But still, yeah, he out-technos O'Brien.
And he gets to be badass. He gets to help the chief. He gets to be...
And they make a really stupid joke that I was just rolling my eyes at. But then when they call back later, it actually made me laugh out loud. They did a good... They redeemed a stupid joke.
They paused the video to laugh for a good 20 seconds.
I applauded them.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not an essential episode unless you really want to know the world. Because this will be about the best time you'll get to explain what the Pawraiths are. But I've already told you what they are. They're the demons who are cast out of heaven.
Well, and it's well acted.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not a, in every sense it's a good episode.
You see the Not Keiko giving all these subtle signals and warnings to O'Brien.
Yeah.
You see O'Brien having to very quickly just smother down his revulsion at this thing that looks like his wife.
And it's
lying next to him and picking up their daughter.
And it's very sadistic, too, because it makes O'Brien, when that night, it makes O'Brien sleep in the bed just so it can be cruel to it.
For no reason except just to tweak him.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, well, we don't want to look out of character, do we? Like, O'Brien sleeping on the couch isn't normal anyway in that household, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, and especially since, you know...
He calls it Wednesday.
He accidentally destroyed one of her bonsai trees, so it's like, exiled to the couch.
Yeah, she's enjoying messing with his head just because... Well, when I say she, I mean the Pawraith. Because even Keiko isn't this mean. And if you know how I feel about Keiko, you know that's quite the compliment to the demon. Also, early on, the demon is very clever because it lists all the different technobabble things O'Brien can do and said, you can probably even, you might even be able to beat me with these things, but I'll kill your wife first.
And we were looking at each other and going, oh no, it's self-aware.
The enemy
has become genre savvy. We're doomed.
We're fighting an alien who's seen the previous episodes of Star Trek and knows how to beat it. So, yeah, like I said, it's a good episode and it stands on its own. And the nice thing is you don't even have to know Star Trek to be able to follow it. Like I said, it's an adequate episode. I never found it too exceptional, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's just mostly not my taste. But if you lean more toward the tense thrillers, then this might be up your alley. So, that's about it. We'll see you for the next episode. Bye for now.